Chapter 28. An ingenious magazine writer, who lived in the time of Mr. Brock and the Duke of Marlborough, compared the latter gentleman's conduct in battle, when he, in peaceful thought the field of death surveyed, to fainting squadrons lent the timely aid, inspired repulsed battalions to engage, and taught the doubtful battle where to rage. Mr. Joseph Addison, I say, compared the Duke of Marlborough to an angel, who is sent by divine command to chastise a guilty people, and displeased his master's orders to perform, rides on the whirlwind, and directs the storm. The first four of these novel lines touch off the Duke's disposition and genius to a tittle. He had a love for such scenes of strife. In the midst of them his spirit rose calm and supreme, soaring like an angel or not, but anyway the compliment is a very pretty one, on the battle clouds majestic, and causing to ebb, or to flow the mighty tide of war. But as this famous simile might apply with equal propriety to a bad angel, as to a good one, it may in like manner be employed to illustrate small quarrels as well as great a little family squabble, in which two or three people are engaged, as well as a vast national dispute, argued on each side by the roaring throats of 500 angry cannon. The poet means, in fact, that the Duke of Marlborough had an immense genius for mischief. Our friend Brock, or Wood, whose actions we love to illustrate by the very handsomest similes, possessed this genius in common with his grace, and was never so happy, or seen to so much advantage, as when he was employed in setting people by the ears. His spirits, usually dull, then rose into the utmost gaiety and good humor. When the doubtful battle flagged, he by his art would instantly restore it. When, for instance, Tom's repulsed battalions of rhetoric fled from his mama's fire, a few words of apt sneer encouragement on Wood's part would bring the fight round again. Or when Mr. Hayes's fainting squadrons of abuse broke upon the stubborn squares of Tom's bristling obstinacy, it was Wood's delight to rally the former, and bring him once more to the charge. A great share had this man in making those bad people worse. Many fierce words and bad passions, many falsehoods and knaveries on Tom's part, much bitterness, scorn, and jealousy on the part of Hayes and Catherine, might be attributed to this hoary old tempter, whose joy and occupation it was to raise and direct the domestic storms and whirlwinds of the family, of which he was a member. And do not let us be accused of an undue propensity to use sounding words, because we compare three scoundrels in the Tyburn Road to so many armies, and Mr. Wood to a mighty field marshal. My dear sir, when you have well studied the world, how supremely great the meanest thing in this world is, and how infinitely mean the greatest, I am mistaken, if you do not make a strange and proper jumble of the sublime and the ridiculous, the lofty and the low. I have looked at the world, for my part, and come to the conclusion that I know not which is which. Well, then, on the night when Mrs. Hayes, as recorded by us, had been to the Marylebone Gardens, Mr. Wood had found the sincerest enjoyment in plying her husband with drink, so that, when Catherine arrived at home, Mr. Hayes came forward to meet her in a manner which showed he was not only surly, but drunk. Tom stepped out of the coach first, and Hayes asked him, with an oath, where he had been. The oath Mr. Billings sternly flung back again with another in its company, and at the same time refused to give his stepfather any sort of answer to his query. The old man is drunk, mother, said he to Mrs. Hayes, as he handed that lady out of the coach before leaving, which as he had to withdraw her hand rather violently from the grasp of the Count, who was inside. Hayes instantly showed the correctness of his surmise by slamming the door courageously in Tom's face when he attempted to enter the house with his mother. And when Mrs. Catherine remonstrated, according to her wont, in a very angry and supercilious tone, Mr. Hayes replied with equal haughtiness, and a regular quarrel ensued. People were accustomed in those days to use much more simple and expressive terms of language than are now thought polite, and it would be dangerous to give, in this present year 1840, the exact words of reproach which passed between Hayes and his wife in 1726. Mr. Wood sat near, laughing his sides out. Mr. Hayes swore that his wife should not go abroad to tea gardens in search of vile popish noblemen, to which Mrs. Hayes replied that Mr. Hayes was a pitiful, lying, sneaking cur, and that she would go where she pleased. Mr. Hayes rejoined that, if she said much more, he would take a stick to her. Mr. Wood whispered, and serve her right. Mrs. Hayes thereupon swore as he had stood his cowardly blows once or twice before, but that if ever he did so again, as sure as she was born, she would stab him. Mr. Wood said, curse me, but I like her spirit. Mr. Hayes took another line of argument, and said, the neighbors would talk, madam. Eh, that they will, no doubt, said Mr. Wood. Then let them, said Catherine. How do we care about the neighbors? Didn't the neighbors talk when you sent Widow Wilkins to gaol? Didn't the neighbors talk when you levied on poor old Thompson? You didn't mind then, Mr. Hayes. Business, ma'am, is business. And if I did distrain on Thompson and lock up Wilkins, I think you knew about it as much as I. Ifeth, I believe you're a pair, said Mr. Wood. Pray, sir, keep your tongue to yourself. Your opinion isn't asked anyhow, no, nor your company wanted neither, cried Mrs. Catherine, with proper spirit. At which remark Mr. Wood only whistled. I have asked this here gentleman to pass this evening along with me. We've been drinking together, ma'am. That we have, said Mr. Wood, looking at Mrs. Cat with the most perfect good humor. I say, ma'am, that we've been a-drinking together. And when we've been a-drinking together, I say that a man is my friend. Dr. Wood is my friend, Madam the Reverend Dr. Wood. We've passed the evening in company, talking about politics, Madam Politics and Riddle Little Igen. We've not been flaunting in tea gardens, and ogling the men. It's a lie, shrieked Mrs. Hayes. Went with Tom, you know I did. The boy wouldn't let me rest till I promised to go. Hang him, I hate him, said Mr. Hayes. He's always in my way. He's the only friend I have in the world, and the only being I care a pin for, said Catherine. He's an impudent, idle, good-for-nothing scoundrel, and I hope to see him hanged, shouted Mr. Hayes. And he pray, madam, whose carriage was that as you came home in? I warrant you paid something for the ride, ha, ha. Another lie, screamed Cat, and clutched hold of a supper knife. Say it again, John Hayes, and, by I'll do for you. Do for me? Hang me, said Mr. Hayes, flourishing a stick, and perfectly pot valiant. Do you think I care for a bastard? And a, he did not finish the sentence, for the woman ran at him like a savage, knife in hand. He bounded back, flinging his arms about wildly, and struck her with his staff sharply across the forehead. The woman went down instantly. A lucky blow was it for Hayes and her. It saved him from death, perhaps, and her from murder. All this scene, a very important one of our drama, might have been described at much greater length, but, in truth, the author has a natural horror of dwelling too long upon such hideous spectacles. Nor would the reader be much edified by a full and accurate knowledge of what took place. The quarrel, however, though not more violent than many that had previously taken place between Hayes and his wife, was about to cause vast changes in the condition of this unhappy pair. Hayes was at the first moment of his victory very much alarmed. He feared that he had killed the woman, and Wood started up rather anxiously too, with the same fancy. But she soon began to recover. Water was brought, her head was raised and bound up, and in a short time Mrs. Catherine gave vent to a copious fit of tears, which relieved her somewhat. These did not affect Hayes much, they rather pleased him, for he saw he had got the better, and although Cat fiercely turned upon him, when he made some small attempt towards reconciliation, he did not heed her anger, but smiled and winked in a self-satisfied way at Wood. The coward was quite proud of his victory, and finding Catherine asleep, or apparently so, when he followed her to bed, speedily gave himself up to slumber too, and had some pleasant dreams to his portion. Mr. Wood also went sniggering and happy upstairs to his chamber. The quarrel had been a real treat to him. It excited the old man, tickled him into good humor, and he promised himself a rare continuation of the fun, when Tom should be made acquainted with the circumstances of the dispute. As for His Excellency the Count, the ride from Marylebone Gardens, and a tender squeeze of the hand, which Catherine permitted to him on parting, had so inflamed the passions of the nobleman, that, after sleeping for 9 hours, and taking his chocolate as usual the next morning, he actually delayed to read the newspaper, and kept waiting a toy shop lady from Cornhill with the sweetest bargain of Mechlin lace, in order to discourse to his chaplain on the charms of Mrs. Hayes. She, poor thing, never closed her lids, except when she would have had Mr. Hayes imagine that she slumbered, but lay beside him, tossing and tumbling, with hot eyes wide open and heart thumping, and pulse of 110, and heard the heavy hours tolling, and at last the day came peering, haggard, through the window curtains, and found her still wakeful and wretched. Mrs. Hayes had never been, as we have seen, especially fond of her lord. But now, as the day made visible to her the sleeping figure and countenance of that gentleman, she looked at him with a contempt and loathing such as she had never felt even in all the years of her wedded life. Mr. Hayes was snoring profoundly. By his bedside, on his ledger, stood a large greasy tin candlestick, containing a lank tallow candle, turned down in the shaft, and in the lower part, his keys, purse, and tobacco pipe. His feet were huddled up in his greasy threadbare clothes, his head and half his sallow face muffled up in a red woolen nightcap. His beard was of several days' growth, his mouth was wide open, and he was snoring profoundly. On a more despicable little creature the sun never shone. And to this sordid wretch was Catherine united forever. What a pretty rascal history might be read in yonder greasy day book, which never left the miser, he never read in any other. Of what a treasure were yonder keys and purse the keepers, not a shilling they guarded, but was picked from the pocket of necessity, plundered from needy wantonness, or pitilessly squeezed from starvation. Fool, a miser, and a coward. Why was I bound to this wretch? Thought Catherine. Comma whom high-spirited and beautiful, did not he tell me so? Semicolon I who, born a beggar, have raised myself to competence, and might have mounted who knows whither, if cursed fortune had not balked me. As Mrs. Cat did not utter these sentiments, but only thought them, we have a right to clothe her thoughts in the genteelest possible language, and, to the best of our power, have done so. If the reader examines Mrs. Hayes's train of reasoning, he will not, we should think, fail to perceive how ingeniously she managed to fix all the wrong upon her husband, and yet to twist out some consolatory arguments for her own vanity. This perverse argumentation we have all of us, no doubt, employed in our time. How often have we poets, politicians, philosophers, family men, found charming excuses for our own rascalities in the monstrous wickedness of the world about us. How loudly have we abused the times and our neighbors. All this devil's logic did Mrs. Catherine, lying wakeful in her bed on the night of the Marylebone fate, exert in gloomy triumph. It must, however, be confessed that nothing could be more just than Mrs. Hayes's sense of her husband's scoundrelism and meanness. For if we have not proved these in the course of this history, we have proved nothing. Mrs. Cat had a shrewd observing mind, and if she wanted for proofs against Hayes, she had but to look before and about her to find them. This amiable pair were lying in a large walnut bed, with faded silk furniture, which had been taken from under a respectable old invalid widow, who had become security for a prodigal son. The room was hung round with an antique tapestry representing Rebecca at the well, Bathsheba bathing, Judith and Holofernes, and other subjects from Holy Writ, which had been many score times sold for £50, and bought back by Mr. Hayes for two, in those accommodating bargains which he made with young gentlemen, who received £50 of money and 50 of tapestry in consideration of their £100 bills. Against this tapestry, and just cutting off Holofernes' head, stood an enormous ominous black clock, the spoil of some other usurious transaction. Some chairs, and a dismal old black cabinet, completed the furniture of this apartment. It wanted but a ghost to render its gloom complete. Mrs. A sat up in the bed sternly regarding her husband. There is, be sure, a strong magnetic influence in wakeful eyes, so examining a sleeping person, do not you, as a boy, remember waking of bright summer mornings, and finding your mother looking over you? Had not the gaze of her tender eyes stolen into your senses long before you woke, and cast over your slumbering spirit a sweet spell of peace, and love, and fresh springing joy? Some such influence had Catherine's looks upon her husband. For, as he slept under them, the man began to writhe about uneasily, and to burrow his head in the pillow, and to utter quick, strange moans and cries, such as have often jarred one's ear, while watching at the bed of the feverish sleeper. It was just upon six, and presently the clock began to utter those dismal grinding sounds, which issue from clocks at such periods, and which sound like the death rattle of the departing hour. Then the bell struck the knell of it. And with this Mr. Hayes awoke, and looked up, and saw Catherine gazing at him. Their eyes met for an instant, and Catherine turned away, burning red, and looking as if as he had been caught in the commission of a crime. A kind of blank terror seized upon old Hayes's soul. A horrible icy fear, and presentiment of coming evil, and yet the woman had but looked at him. He thought rapidly over the occurrences of the last night, the quarrel, and the end of it. He had often struck her before when angry, and heaped all kinds of bitter words upon her. But, in the morning, she bore no malice, and the previous quarrel was forgotten, or, at least, passed over. Why should the last night's dispute not have the same end? Hayes calculated all this, and tried to smile. "I hope we're friends, Cat," said he. "You know I was in liquor last night, and sadly put out by the loss of that £50. They'll ruin me, dear, I know they will." Mrs. Hayes did not answer. "I should like to see the country again, dear," said he, in his most wheedling way. "Of a mind, do you know, to call in all our money? It's you who have made every farthing of it, that's sure, and it's a matter of £2,000 by this time. Suppose we go into Warwickshire, Cat, and buy a farm, and live genteel. Shouldn't you like to live a lady in your own county again? How they'd stare at Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.